This is Fresh Air. I'm Marty Moscoen, in for Terry Gross. The pictures we've come to associate with the plight of African refugees are those heartrending photographs of hungry, sick, emaciated children near death. They are often the impetus for action for sending food and medicine to those in desperate need. For the past couple of years, my guest, photographer Fazel Sheikh, has visited refugee camps in Africa where Ethiopians, Sudanese, Somalis, and Rwandans have fled civil war and famine. But his photographs give a different picture of refugee life. They are portraits of individuals, of families, friends, and groups of people who, while living in desperate conditions, have managed to create a community. Fazel Sheikh grew up in New York and in Kenya. His photographs are currently on exhibit at the International Center for Photography in New York and are in a new book called A Sense of Common Ground. Fazel Sheikh first went to a Sudanese refugee camp in 1992 on a United Nations High Commission for Refugees flight, along with aid workers, some journalists, and another photographer. Instead of rushing in to take his pictures, he hung back, watching and waiting. After the team got what they wanted, they left, and Sheikh stayed behind with his camera. Before he began to work, he says he thought it was important to find the camp elders and ask their permission to take pictures.
It just seemed to me that though I had the UN permission, if I wanted to move into a community, I certainly had to ask the people that, in a sense, were running the place. And so, yeah, I decided after a time to approach the elders, a man named Deng Dao, and I was given a meeting with him, and I asked him for his permission. And he had noticed me moving through the camp in the previous days. And he said to me, I'm just a refugee. Why are you asking me? But I tell you this, the tone of his voice was such that it was clear that he had seen it as a real trespass that people had moved in and just moved through his community without his permission. And so I think just by virtue of asking, it gave me a kind of entree to another sort of side of the community there. And he agreed, and we began working together, and he began really to instruct me about what the other levels of the community held. And in another sense, by giving over the power to him or to the refugees, in a way makes it impossible for you to choose a person based on their physical type. You know, you can't move into a large group of people and say, oh, you know, that person looks really funky. Let's photograph that one. And I just sort of let them decide. And by virtue of that, I witnessed things that I never could have imagined would be so strong or striking.
You speak Swahili.
Mm-hmm.
Does that give you a special entree in some of these camps anyway?
To some communities it does, but it's... Sometimes it sort of sets me apart because they're curious. Why, you know, why is this person who looks this way speak our language? The fact that I have somewhat a common history does often give me an entree. And sometimes in the Somali border, my name, you know, oh, Sheikh Fazel Ilahi, it's okay, you know, suddenly. So it was mixed, I think. The good thing is that it allowed me to communicate generally, you know, directly with the people in most of the camps.
Well, I want to talk a little bit about how then you took these photographs. Looking through the book, they clearly look like portraits. You clearly, it's a very conscious kind of act. You have, for the most part, either an individual looking out at the camera, looking out at the viewer or you or people together, but in a sense, very conscious of being photographed. Did you pose anybody? Did you let them essentially figure out how they wanted to be in front of a camera?
Yeah, well, I found that the least successful images were the ones that I had posed. But just going back to the first part of your question, they are very formal in their nature. I use a Polaroid camera, and it's a kind of a clunky apparatus, which takes a lot of time to set up. And I decided to make them formal in that I wanted it to be clear that I had their consent, and that they were collaborating with me in making the image and looking directly at me, that they weren't sort of surreptitiously taken unbeknownst to them. And initially, you know, I would ask them, say, to hold a pose that I thought was very striking maybe. But I quickly found that the ones that I could imagine as being strong never had the resonance that the ones I recognized afterwards for having been powerful. There's that image of the three women, and that for me was probably the most instructive image I have ever made. It was one of the first days that I was working in the camp, and I should probably describe it a bit. Yeah. There was a young girl, 15-year-old girl, who was recovering from malaria. And it was on this, I'd say the second or third day that I was working in the camp. It was late in the afternoon. And I didn't really feel like making the image, but one of Deng Dao's helpers asked me to photograph this family because they were related to him. And I agreed. And in fact, I didn't really think the image was all that strong right after having made it. I guess I was too overwhelmed by the experience. But later when I looked at it after some time, I saw the way in which this girl, 15, is not, in recovering from malaria, is not sort of standing there on her own. She's bolstered by her pregnant mother and her aunt. And her aunt sort of anchors her from the side and chooses to direct her gaze at her niece. And this is somebody who's never been photographed before, and yet that's her first inclination, is not to see herself rendered, but to show her concern for this daughter who's, for this niece who's recovering.
Well, I think this theme of people touching each other is one that you see over and over mm-hmm. in these photographs. When there are two people or more together, there's a real strong physicality between the people. And I assume this happened naturally.
Yeah, that's a natural thing. And something that I've always marveled at because it was so absent in a lot of other images I had seen. Of course, I've spent a lot of my life in Kenya, and so I have always been very drawn to the physical, demonstrative nature of the communities there. You know, in Nairobi, men hold hands. And it's not a sexual thing. It's just a kind of a bond, a camaraderie. And this is the way that the people often presented themselves to the camera, to me, and then, you know, by extension to the viewer, was as a unit. And in almost all of the camps I've found that though people are maybe in desperate circumstance, you rarely have the sense that they're alone. Mm. And there's something about that I've not learned before, that though there are these external organizations helping them, they also have the ability to help themselves in the face of, you know, a horrible, horrific history.
Well, looking at your book, you don't use the word camp. You describe these as refugee communities. So mm-hmm. there is structure, there is organization, there is relationship going on. Is that something that you think you found because you approached these refugee communities, camps, in a different kind of way than another kind of photographer?
Well, one of the reasons I call them communities is that they are certainly ongoing. And I think a lot of the media imagery is from the initial exodus. I mean, the most current one, say, in regard to my book, was the Rwanda situation, where 250,000 people flooded into Tanzania in the course of a single day. It was the largest exodus in the history of refugee migration. And for my part, I'm more interested in going to those communities after they've reestablished some of their bonds. The Rwandan camps, in general, would recreate the village that they had in Rwanda within the refugee camp. And so that was the way I was most interested in visiting, I think, was to see them when they were beginning to be a unit again, sort of fending for themselves. And there's another thing that sort of touches on is the way, it's a kind of a Marxist aesthetic, I guess, where you're willing to sacrifice the individual in the image to your higher purpose. And that was something, I guess, that I instantly, I couldn't feel close to that. I didn't feel a kinship with that at all. Somehow I thought if you were going to get to some higher good, it had to be through the specific nature of the individual and his testimony. That there's just the time when you feel as though it's not appropriate to make a picture. Or at least I do. And I've always felt uncomfortable trespassing mm-hmm. on that line. Mm-hmm. And I think that that's probably just a personal thing. I don't mean to say that those other images don't in some way have an effect in the world. I just mean personally what it is to trespass on a very personal moment in, you know, either in illness or in death or, you know, something like that.
And when you have a camera in your hands, you feel this is a powerful instrument that you have in your hands.
It is a powerful instrument. It is. You know, early on, I thought a lot about exploitation. And the truth of the matter is I don't like making the pictures all that much, because what it does is the act sets you apart. And so, in a certain sense, that's why I chose to work in this way, because I'm less interested in the act of making that image, but I am interested in the sort of the communal thing that goes around making the image, because it is that, you know, you have to use a tripod and it's a clunky camera. You know, it becomes a real part of the day. It becomes a real event. And that part I quite like.
Well, I'm trying to imagine then, as you took these photographs with your big clunky camera, as you describe it, would people gather around? Was there a crowd behind you watching you work?
Oh, yeah.
And perhaps giving instructions, ideas,
sometimes they would give me instruction, and often they they would stand there and sort of instruct the sitter for the photograph, you know, and how they should hold themselves, or, you know, mockingly. Yeah, I usually had a horde of assistants surrounding me. I mean, some of the images are just couples of people, but, you know, there are generally, you know, 50 or 100 people right beside me.
I'm curious, since I imagine a lot of these people have never been photographed before,
yeah,
how you explained to them what you were doing and why?
Well, I generally explained to them that this was... loosely, it was an opportunity for them to present their side of what their lives were like. And, you know, I work with this Polaroid camera, so you get a negative and a picture at the same time. And so people who had never been photographed before often, you know, maybe have never even seen their likeness in a mirror. You show them the picture. And sometimes, like as in the Ethiopian camp, the women would look at the image and they couldn't really recognize it as them.
They didn't see themselves.
No, until somebody would point out, you know, no, that's you. And suddenly they'd just go, oh, just couldn't
happy,
fathom
you think,
it.
Or?
Oh, absolutely happy. Sorry, there was an unclear screech. But, yeah, so in their presentation, I think, I don't happen to believe that the presentation is so much because of their not having photographed. I think it's more cultural in terms of this is who I am and what I have to offer. Somebody asked me recently, well, they had seen the show and they spoke about, I think maybe they read it into the images, I'm not sure, you'd have to tell me, but that they said that some of the images were of the faces that were sort of fearful and anxious. And I thought, I asked them why that was, and they said, well, look, they never smile. And I thought about that and I thought, well, you know, isn't a Western presentation to the camera so much more fearful and anxious in that we're not willing to look at it and say, you know, here I am, this is my face with all its, you know, nooks and crannies. It's more I have to put on my facade or my game face.
Well, looking at a number of the photographs, I'm reminded of the kinds of portraits taken in the 19th century in this country when photography was new. There was a kind of formality. People were unsmiling, but they seemed very honest. I mean, there was an honest, direct look at the camera. And I wonder whether you saw that too.
I do. I think sometimes it may be an intimidating look because it asks you what you're bringing to the image. Mm. And certainly with refugees, you have a lot of prior knowledge, I think, about what that life must mean and entail. And certainly I've been drawn to a lot of 19th century work, you know, in early 20th century Walker Evans. And not so much maybe the images, but the sort of dogged determination to follow through on their project, you know, on documenting whatever it was, you know, that impresses me greatly.
We're going to take a very short break and talk some more. My guest is Fazıl Şeyh, and he has a book of photographs called A Sense of Common Ground, and it's photographs taken at various refugee camps in Africa, and an exhibition of his work is at the International Center of Photography in New York City. It will be there through March 31st. We'll be back after a short break. This is Fresh Air. My guest is photographer Fazel Sheikh.
When you're at a camp, where do you stay?
It depends on the camp. Sometimes I would sleep just outside. You know, they were generally in the desert, so I would drive from the camp and sleep outside. Often I stay with the High Commission for Refugees or Médecins Sans Frontières, the Doctors Without Borders. They generally go to more remote areas and stay closer into the camps. I'm really greatly impressed with what they do. They are people who just, you know, the doctors are also building the hospital. You know, they don't just fly in for an operation and then take off. They really live there and take care of the camp on many different levels.
Are there times when you think, especially looking at the difficult life in a refugee camp, that you'd rather be a doctor than a photographer, that you could do more?
That's a great question. I mean, when I was first working in the camps, I saw things that I felt like I really wanted the tools that a doctor had. I wanted that ability. And for a long time, I actually was planning to go to medical school, oddly enough. And I continued to work in the camps a little bit through this period. And I had some friends who were doctors there, in particular with this Doctors Without Borders. And I found as I would visit with them and talk to them that they had the same sense of, in some respect, futility, that though they had a tangible effect on the people, you know, somebody came in ill, they could fix them, they went home, there was always somebody else. And so what I was drawn to in medicine was the notion that you really had a tangible, something that you could measure your effect. And in making art or documenting in this way, you have to trust that it has some effect in the world, but you can't measure it so readily.
Not so tangible.
No, it's not nearly as tangible. And I have since come to realize that maybe, though I could have been, you know, a doctor, I could have learned that skill, I think, that I feel more comfortable staying with what I think is what I have to say about the place.
Your father's from Kenya. Your mother was from the United States. And when did you first go back to Kenya? When was the first time you ever went there?
Oh, I was 2 and 3 years old. Some of my first memories actually are from Kenya.
From Nairobi? Is that where your family's from?
From Nairobi, yeah. My father grew up there and all of his family is there. It's funny, recently people have been asking me about that, and as though somehow the fact that my father was Kenyan justifies the endeavor, justifies the work. Well, you know, I sort of feel like it doesn't matter where you come from. You could easily be Kenyan and make a body of images that is sort of alienating. It's a kind of, I don't know if it's a reverse racism or what, that somehow it justifies who I am rather than the images sort of speaking on their own. But certainly I think I'm a product of that mixed background and the way that I approach my life and the making of the images is from those two very different perspectives.
Yeah, how different are those perspectives? And I'm curious to how much time you go back and forth between those two continents.
Yeah. I used to feel a little bit conflicted in moving back and forth because I could fit into both areas, but somehow they didn't jive with one another. And so I felt that kind of culture shock. My mother was from New Jersey and from sort of a white WASP family from near here. And my father's family, Indian originally, what's now Pakistan, but had emigrated to Nairobi, and his father had lived there since the early part of the century. And so, I mean, I had these very different families, you know, and also grew up in New York City, in a place where, you know, it was hard to be a racist or you see yourself as some sort of minority. You know, now I go back to Kenya and they say, oh, but you are 0.5 because, you know, you're half American and half Kenyan. And I'm sure that that has greatly informed the images that I make, in that I don't readily see myself as other. You know, I see it as sort of one big community. And so it enables you to go anywhere.
You've certainly traveled a lot. And is a camera a good traveling companion?
No. Sorry. It's a good. It helps you to or it helps me to focus and maybe begin to explore how you fit or how you feel about a place. It's still therapeutic in that way. So in that sense, it is a good companion because it focuses your attention, you know, literally. In another sense, I'm always wary of what ability it has to set you apart. And lately, I'm much more comfortable with that. I'm not interested so much in going into a community and feeling like I fit in. I think that's something I was more concerned about when I was younger was, well, I have to prove myself to these people because I want to be part. Well, no, I mean, I accept who I am, and I'm grateful for their hospitality, but I don't so much want to give over my views of the world to them.
Well, thank you very much for joining us today on Fresh Air.
Oh, well, thank you for having me.
Photographer Fazel Sheikh, his book about African refugees is called A Sense of Common Ground. An exhibition of his photographs is on view at the International Center for Photography in New York through the end of March. I'm Marty Moss-Cohen, and this is Fresh Air.